This is The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
On the show, we'll share innovative strategies, expert insights, and success stories from industry leaders across the world.
You'll learn everything you need to turn your contact centre into a strategic value centre, where interactions become memorable experiences. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Hope.
Today, we're chatting with Luke Jamieson. Luke is a solutions consultant with Upland Software and a thought leader in the employee engagement and customer experience spaces. He spent his career coming up with unconventional approaches to conventional problems and is exploring how the industry can grow and adapt in the future. AI has definitely been a huge topic of discussion across all industries recently, and contact centers are no different. But what can it do for the employee experience?
In this episode, Luke will take a deep dive on AI and give us a bit of a sneak preview of his upcoming book about creating sustainable employee engagement. You'll hear how to improve your employee engagement using a multifaceted approach. He'll share the story of how he wrote his new book in lockdown, and Luke will pass on the surprising benefits AI integration can have for your employees. Let's get into it.
Hey, welcome to the show. Hi, Arnie.
Hey, Sean.
Good morning, Luke. How are you?
Yeah, g'day. I'm good.
Good to hear. You've been on the podcast before, but for anyone who hasn't heard that episode, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. These days, I think I'm a polymath. So I kind of do a bit of everything, consulting, and I write and I do a whole heap of things. But for a day job, I work at a software company called Upland Software, and I'm a solutions consultant there. And basically the job is to, again, just consult. It's about finding the sweet spot between a customer's challenge and the technology and how do they work best and if they even work best, because they might not, and that's okay too.
So Luke, you know quite a lot about AI, and that's going to be the big focus of today's conversation. Can you tell us, what do you see as the big changes, particularly around what you're seeing in the EX space or employee experience, as AI becomes more popular?
So I think the big thing around the EX space is trying to calm the fears, first of all, that it may or may not be taking all of your jobs. So I wrote an article recently about on that topic, that AI is here to take our tasks, but not to take our jobs. And that is somewhat true. It will take our jobs, though, if our jobs are built around tasks. So I think there's a lot of work being done to look at job design and how jobs are actually designed at the moment. Are they driven towards purpose and impact? And are they purely task-driven, or are they actually adding human value? So I think that's a big part. I think the other part is, how are we integrating AI into our everyday jobs, and how are we using that to help us reduce cognitive load? How do we use that to be more creative, more productive? So I think it's very much around, how do we start using AI in job design and moving away from that really task-driven PD?
So Luke, tell us, what are the biggest benefits for AI and the employee experience?
Genuinely, I think it's this ability to take away all the things that turn us into robots. It's taking away all of those jobs that have no meaning, no impact, and the things that you hate about your job. You know, I remember going for a job interview and they were asking me about all the things I like. And then they're like, what about all the things you don't like? Because there's lots of that in the job. And I think that the AI is going to help eliminate those sort of conversations. And some practical examples of where I've seen AI working really well, in particularly in contact center spaces, is around knowledge management. So auto-filling the next best action, auto-filling, you know, this auto-suggest of what someone, you know, might be calling about, taking those transcriptions real time and preloading wrap-ups and all that sort of stuff, so that people don't have to spend all this time after a call wrapping it up and summarizing. It's already doing all of those sort of things, allowing contact center agents to be more productive, to be adding value, which is speak to people and making human connection. And also just reducing that cognitive load. So even taking away that need to even search. So I think from a knowledge management perspective, we think a lot about, how easy is it to search? How great is our search engine? How quickly can we get to that answer? And every knowledge management system is going to say that theirs is awesome, but AI can do all of that search and deliver the piece of knowledge to someone, so they don't have to be searching. I think those sort of things are really good. Or maybe we'll talk a bit bit about creativity later, but I also think there is this idea of creativity and AI and how they potentially, is it adding or is it detracting from creativity?
It's a really interesting one. I think when prior to this recent explosion of AI, creativity is one of the things on the list that I think people were potentially thinking it wasn't going to be playing in that area, certainly not as soon as what it is now. Yeah, some very interesting things happening with generative AI in that space. So it sounds like what you're saying is that AI is going to help remove some of the mundane, the repetitive, the things that are of lower value, still important to be done, but lower value, certainly lower value than what a human can achieve, to free them up to do more value creating activities. All that stuff's fantastic, but what are some of the challenges of integrating AI into the EX?
One of the things is that we potentially take away some of that creativity. And the tenuous links that we're able to make in our brain, I think AI is still really struggling with. One of the examples I heard recently was around lawyers. And so before they get to court, there's all these people, these junior lawyers going through, looking for precedents through all of these different cases that have taken place. And there's an argument that AI could do all of that. It can find all of those moments. And one of the guys I play touch with, he's a lawyer. He was explaining that sometimes there's this tenuous link and it's just enough to make that precedence, or it's just enough to create that human connection, and that AI is just, if we wholly steer into it replacing that, then it could really miss some of the nuance that happens within humanity. And it can pick up facts, but it can't pick up the emotion and the tone of a lot of these things. And so I think there's still a lot of challenge in there. And I also think we become over-reliant. So if we are hell-bent on having AI do everything, and we need to really step back and think about what's the purpose. If it's a cost reduction, then that's probably the wrong approach. The approach needs to be, how does AI influence and enhance that employee and customer experience? And if we're not taking that mindset to it and it's just a pure cost, I think we're willing to compromise on so much. It just opens us up to way too much compromise.
For contact centers wanting to improve that EX through AI, what advice would you give them?
If you're going to go down that path, it needs to be about making their job feel like it has more impact, is more meaningful, and people have a sense of purpose. So if we're removing all of those small tasks that AI can do, what are we filling that space with? And so really thinking about that design before even getting to that point of, let's take all of these pieces out, actually take a holistic view of the role and say, what are we trying to achieve here? What's the greater impact we can have both on an employee's sense of purpose, meaning, impact, and how does that affect the customer at the end? I think if we go in with that mindset, that's a baseline of where we start. And then those guiding principles then work on how much do you automate and how much do you take away? Because ultimately we want to get up in the morning and we want to do a job that fills our cup. My daughter actually asked me this week. She goes, Dad, whose bucket did you fill today? And I thought that was really cute, but I also thought it was really insightful from a six-year-old to be saying that. And we want to do that. Like, they were the moments when I reflected upon my day of where I'd added value to somebody else and given them made their day better. They're the moments that are most fulfilling for me. And in a customer service role in particular, like, that is the crux of the role. How do we make the person that we're speaking to's life better? And if we're going to automate all of these things, let's make sure that it's in the benefit of both the customer and the employee, because it allows the employee to show greater value and have that impact and fill somebody else's bucket.
So you've spoken about AI supporting more knowledge work and helping to enrich the lives of people working in customer service roles. What about the intersection then of commercializing AI and the employee experience? Where do you see AI delivering really commercially focused outcomes around the employee experience? Or is it a thing? Should we even be thinking about commercializing the employee experience? So when you talk about, you know, we should enrich people's lives and give them more purpose, and so they come to work, they, you know, they feel like they're making a difference. And that stuff's all really good, but to what end? I think when it boils down to it, you look at a balance sheet for an organization, how do you articulate the benefits of the employee experience, and obviously with this lens of AI over it?
Yeah, there's always going to be a commercial value to this. And I've got this great diagram of a virtuous cycle that I created, and you know, maybe we can share that somehow. But we know that there's this virtuous cycle where humans have a thirst for learning, And when we then feed that thirst for learning, we then start to do something with the knowledge that we actually get. We start to actually put some value around that knowledge. And that's probably more of an intrinsic nature, but we start to care for the fact that we're more knowledgeable. And then when we have that knowledge, we start to care for it and nurture it more. And then when we care and nurture for stuff, we start to have pride. And then when we have that pride, we want to stay at our workplace. And it creates this cycle where you're wanting to stay longer, you're learning more, you're knowing more, you're more knowledgeable, you're therefore more efficient. You're also, from an attrition point of view for the organization, it's better off. And this creates this lovely little ecosystem, right, of employee engagement. Now, all of that then feeds into this customer virtuous cycle. So when a knowledgeable agent is, if they're efficient and they're knowledgeable, it means that there's a greater customer experience. When there's greater customer experience, there's greater likelihood or less propensity to churn, greater likelihood for a great review and net promoter score, greater loyalty. That loyalty then feeds into the bottom line of a company. And then the company has all this extra money. And what can they do with that? They can then invest that in things like more knowledge and more training for the agent, who then becomes more knowledgeable. And this virtuous cycle just kicks off at both an employee and a customer level and at a commercial level. So there is real value in providing a greater employee experience. And where AI fits into that is that we can make some of these processes smoother and faster and smarter. Look, knowledge management, yes, I work in an organization that has knowledge management products, but I also work there because I believe in knowledge management and the power of it. And I think that knowledge has such a massive impact on somebody's ability to do a great job. It does two things, right? So it provides confidence, and confidence is made up of the ability to be able to actually find that knowledge and speak to it, knowing that it's right. So confident agents, they have a higher first call resolution. They have a higher satisfaction score when they're speaking with somebody. And knowledge is a huge part of driving that confidence. And so the more we can use things like AI to drive that right knowledge to the right person at the right time, what that allows them to do, I said it before, it reduces this cognitive load of having to actually search. And what do you fill that space with? Well, you fill that with empathy and greater listening and all the things that I think we often struggle to do when we're on the phone speaking with somebody, because it's you're so worried and so focused on finding the information and getting those facts right, and so worried about breaching compliance that you forget that there's actually a human on the end of the phone and you need to actually provide some empathy and listen. And sometimes it's just about making that connection. There's a commercial undertone of all of that.
I can feel the passion as you talk about that, Luke, but maybe let's actually continue on that line. You touched on AI and creativity, and I know that's something you've been quite passionate about as well. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've been wrestling with it, genuinely wrestling with it, because there's so many for and against. And I don't know about you, but when I write, I often will write and then argue my own point. And so I'll write an article 1 week about something and then I'll contradict myself the next, just because a lot of that time it's about taking all of that thought process and putting it on paper, and then it's a way of self-analyzing. So at first I thought, no, not because AI can't do art. Like, I think we've seen this crazy explosion of AI generated art, and there's been lots of tests of whether people like that art more than an original. Like, there was a story recently where this guy took a photo of a bat and he waited there for some crazy amount of hours, like 12 hours, to get this perfect shot of this bat flying in front of the moon. And then AI generated it in about 2 seconds, and they put it in a gallery and everyone liked the AI generated one more. And I was thinking, oh God, creativity, we're screwed. But that's probably not the right example when it comes to this, because what I think will happen is there will be a renaissance in the human arts, you know, just in arts, right? We will go back to appreciating a hand-painted mural or whatever. My daughter recently got, for her birthday, she was given a disposable camera, that's the one. And so she's got 12 shots on this thing. So we're going through Europe. We just collated all of our photos as a family, and we had like 7,000 photos from everyone's phone. And we're kind of, you know, going through them, and, you know, it was like, yep, next, 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 next. Whereas when Emily developed these photos and when she was taking these photos, she really thought about it. There was this time taken to frame things up, waiting for that perfect moment to use these precious bits of film. And then the anticipation that came from waiting for the film to be developed, and will they turn out okay? And then once you got them back, What photos do you think she's got sitting up in her bedroom? It's not the 7,000 photos we took on an iPhone. It's these like 12 photos that she's carefully curated. And I think there'll be an appreciation of that. I think we will go back to finding the beauty in a lot of the arts, traditional arts that we know. Maybe we'll even get back to writing on typewriters just so that people know that we didn't, you know, use ChatGPT. So I think there's a renaissance coming of that, which I think is a good thing. But at the same time, I always say, and I've said this for most of my career to the people that I've led, is it's not about how creative you are, it's how you're creative. And I've seen people use Excel and be incredibly creative with how they use that to get answers and create these incredible spreadsheets that are beyond my wildest capability. And that is a form of creativity, the way that their brain works to make these Excel documents work. And so where I think AI is going to help is not doing the whole process, but being the inspiration for the process. I'm not anti-ChatGPT. As much as it frustrates me to see articles getting pumped out every week from it, and you know when they are, and it's like, in this day and age of, and almost every article that starts with that, it's kind of like, oh, really? I'm not anti-ChatGPT because I think it has a space for creating the spark. Sometimes it's so hard to just start, and you just need some format to then kickstart your thinking. And so you can use that. And that's, you know, that's what conversation does too, right? So if you're having a conversation with ChatGPT to create that spark, I don't see anything wrong with that. Like a mid-journey to create some imagery to get your brain thinking on what you want things to look like. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's where it's wholly and solely used and you're replacing that as your own IP. That's where it irks me. At the moment, I see that we're taking a really polarized view on it. It's either good or bad. It's either allowed in your workplace or it's not allowed in your workplace. And I think what we need to be doing is allowing it into the workplace with guidelines and just being more open to its use and being really transparent about it. And I think by being transparent and saying, yes, you're allowed to use it, but we want you to tell us when you're using that and how you use that, I think that's a better approach, because then we start to learn from it. We start to learn of using it better. We start to learn how people want to use it. And then we can start to tailor that AI. I think we're in this phase right now where we're using everybody else's AI. But the future will be, we will create our own AIs within our organizations to allow us to tailor that to our own use case. And so I think sooner we allow things like ChatGPT and Midjourney and all that sort of stuff into a workplace, the sooner we can learn from them and how we want to use those.
As you were talking, I was thinking about what you said earlier about the employee experience and the opportunity to create more meaning, give people the opportunity to have more impact. The meaning part was what stuck with me. And I think certainly when I think about the creative space, it's the meaning behind it that really is the thing that catches me. And whether it's music or visual arts, it's the meaning that sits behind it. It's sometimes the struggle that's gone into creating it, and then what that then resonates with something in me. And I think if it's just purely AI, you lose that, because there isn't, whilst it might be a very beautiful looking image or lovely sounding piece of music, for me anyway, it loses some of that depth of meaning. And I think that's where maybe you call it the old way of creating art, I don't think will ever die.
I've been painting a lot lately and really enjoyed the process, because it's almost like I stop thinking. It's those moments where I'm just, my hands start doing the thinking. You know, the homunculus man, you know that? Have you ever seen that image? Yeah. If you don't know it, look it up. This ugly sculpture of a human, and they've got over accentuated lips and eyes and ears and hands. And it's representing how we sense and how we connect. And I find when I'm painting that my hands are doing the thinking, and you're making these micro adjustments all the time throughout that journey. Whereas when I've used things like Midjourney, I find myself quite frustrated. So it's, you know, you're constantly adjusting the prompt, and then you're kind of hoping that it's right, and you're hoping that it's going to come back with something, and then it doesn't. And it's like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just picture what I'm thinking about? And you don't have control. And so I think that that's a frustration that I think will drive that thought of, how do we use that as the spark? Hey, it's given me this idea, but I'm going to have to go away and really refine that myself and do that myself, because it's never going to get me and what my vision is.
So how do you see AI impacting creative pursuits in the future?
I don't know. That's the honest answer.
That's a good answer.
You know, I've been wrestling with it, just this idea of, does it have a place? At the moment, where I think I've set it on is it has a place for the spark, but it's also the definition of AI, right? Like, is it cognitive art or is it something else? Like, I think when I think about the drones, the drone shows that you see instead of fireworks and the amazing algorithms that are written to make this beautifully creative display of drones with lights in the air, I think, wow, that's incredible. There's a place for that. Do we give up our thought process and our creativity, give it to generative AI to come up with imagery? At the moment, it's a no. It's a flat out no. What it could come back with, like, could just be really scary. I use Canva a lot to design and to create covers and artwork, etc., for organizations. There's a new feature on there where it extends the image. So you can take an image and you say, extend that out. And so it will take sort of a square image and push that to a 16:9 and autofill in what it thinks the rest of the image might be. Does a pretty decent job, actually. But this week I generated one for a client and it put a picture in the background. It was the old Werribee Mansion. It extended out the hallway and one of the artworks on the wall looked like Hitler. If we give up our creativity for Gen AI with no interception, you know, and I'm thinking about like the drones, right? If you gave that to Gen AI and said, go and create this amazing fireworks show with drones kind of thing, what images could it come up with, right? If you're not giving, there's no time to stop and fix that and take that out. If it's up there putting out swastikas in the air, God help us, right? It's really scary to be thinking about it that way. So look, where I've landed, long-winded answer. I think it's the spark. I think it's the, right now it's the spark. Give me the idea and then let me refine it. Because I think the idea starts with you. I just can't get the image from my head to the paper. But once it's on the paper, I can tell you whether that's right or wrong. And then I can refine from there.
While we're talking about the creativity, I guess, you've also written a book. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Honestly, it's been the bane of my existence this year. And I didn't realize it was going to be so hard. I've learned so much through the process. So let me start with the definition of coming soon. Soon is, I'm glad I said soon, because what I define as soon and you define as soon might be very different. So I wrote a book during COVID about employee engagement called More Sense, Less Incentive. I wrote a phenomenal amount, something like 500 pages. So it was epic, like a double John Grisham novel. And yeah, it got edited right down because there was lots of repetition and rubbish in there. So this is pre-ChatGPT. So I sent it out to a publisher to get viewed and everything like that. And by the time I'd finished it and got it refined down, the publishers come back and said, look, there's a really big queue. Since ChatGPT landed, we're getting about 600 manuscripts a week. And I was like, what were you getting before? And they were like, we'd be lucky to get 60 a month. So there was just inundation of books out on the market that are using ChatGPT, which is just sad. But some of the other things I've learned about writing this book is don't share anything about it before it's actually out. So I wrote an article back in May. It was off a talk that I did in January. So I came up with this topic in January, did a talk on stage about it, then wrote an article to back it up. And then a couple of months later, a guy releases a book that is basically the topic. It has taken the topic, it's taken the graphics, the whole lot, and created a 90-page book off the back of it, like entirely plagiarized. That's just heartbreaking because you start going down this process of cease and desist and all the legal stuff. And to be honest, I just don't have the time, energy, money to put into it. So it's like, you know what, lesson learned, good on you for doing what you did. And so, you know, in the last month, I've rewritten that chapter. And so the book, I keep saying the book soon, it is going to be very soon. It's now just a timing thing for me. It's like just, and the nervousness of putting it out there. But look, it's a book about employee engagement and using intrinsic motivation, the power of intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic. And the crux of it is that as long as I can remember, when we talk about employee engagement, we talk about R&R, reward and recognition. When you ask someone, what's your employee engagement? Like, we've got a great reward and recognition program. Reward, for the most part in these programs, is extrinsic. Recognition is about the do and appreciation is about the who. And we can recognize what someone does and we can give them a ribbon and all this sort of stuff. And I'll give you an example of that. Sean, you know I'm a baker and I recently entered into the Lionville Great Cake Bake Off. I was so nervous and spent like 14 hours on this cake and ended up winning it, right? So I'm thrilled about that. Win this. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Congrats.
I made it into the paper, the Wombat Post. So it's, yeah. We're talking big time.
I thought that'd be framed up somewhere.
Yeah. I should have the ribbon here, yeah. link to the article below. But it was great getting the ribbon and it was nice to get this ribbon, but it was the comments after about, from the four judges about the appreciation. They're like, we've never tasted the cake more delicate. Like, can we get the recipe? Can you write that for us? Like, the appreciation of the effort was what warmed my heart and made me just so proud. And I think we forget about appreciation a lot within our workplace. We fall back on reward and recognition. We fall back on this extrinsic idea of give someone something or put their name up in lights and that's going to tick all the boxes for employee engagement. And we forget about all the intrinsic things, like what we're talking about, Sean, the meaning behind what we do, what's the impact that we're having. I basically go through all the different senses and there's 12 in there and they range from like a sense of self to a sense of trust and a sense of relationship. And I go through all of these different things that actually what I believe make up employee engagement. And reward and recognition are just the sprinkles we put on top. And unfortunately, that's where a lot of organizations just stay. So, yep, it's coming soon.
We're looking forward to it. Hey, tell us, what's the biggest thing you learned in writing a book?
I learned that you question yourself. So I wrote and rewrote things because I took this idea, I wrote it down, and then I questioned myself on what I'd just written. And then I'd go and research something and then get a different perspective and then come back and go, you know what, I was probably wrong on that. And I think that's been the biggest delay on the book, right? It's just this idea that I keep going back and rereading stuff and then going, I need more perspective on my own writings. And I think if I kept doing that, it would never get out. But the biggest learning is that there's always going to be another perspective. That doesn't mean that you're wrong. It doesn't mean that you're right. It just means that there's different perspective. When people read the book, I hope that they take it for what it is. It's a perspective, doesn't need to be the holy grail and fact and truth of, well, it's my truth. But it doesn't have to be somebody else's truth. Someone else may come up with something very different and go, you know what? Actually, reward is amazing and this is why, and here's my book on why extrinsic reward wins. good on you. So yeah, the biggest learning is that it's just perspective and perspectives can change as you gain more knowledge. Yeah.
So I guess the big question here, because I'm very excited to actually read the book now, is when you say coming soon, do you have a date in mind in terms of coming soon?
Yeah, I'm going to put that out in Q1 next year. So it's going to be fresh for 2024. So start the new year on with something fresh.
Beautiful.
Very good. All right. So let's start to wrap things up, Luke. And we have two questions that we ask all the guests that come on the show. So the first one is, if you could change one thing about the context in the industry, what would it be?
It would be how we advertise for roles. Whenever I see roles out there, they're always saying great entry-level position, great kickstart to your career. And the next minute you hear the same company complaining that they've got high attrition. And it's like, well, you keep writing these roles as if they're stepping stones. Like actually the contact center is a career in itself. And, you know, I've had an amazing career in the contact center for 18 years now, and I love it, live and breathe it. And yeah, we just need to rethink about how we advertise it, that you'll be proud that this is a career and an industry.
And the second question is, if you had a crystal ball, what do you think the future of contact centers looks like?
There's always going to be a need for them. And I think, but they will be the white glove service. So I think there'll be a lot of containment in digital. I think digital will continue to contain more and more and more level one inquiries. But when that gets through to a human, it will be white glove. And so that role will become a higher paid role and a role that people have a real expertise in, being able to really make connections with humans. So I think that's one thing that will happen in the future. I think the other crystal ball moment for the future of the contact center will be how we deal with virtual assistants. So I think we've seen, you know, how Google can place a call to someone and book an appointment. And we've seen how, so using that, it's going to be really interesting when it gets to a point where both virtual agents are talking to each other and making those connections. So I think that is very, very, very close. I recently got called by a virtual agent and it took me about 3 minutes to figure it out that it wasn't a real human. So even to the point where I said, are you a bot, and the bot came back and said, ha ha, do I really sound that bad? And I had to push a bit harder, and it got to a point where it was actually a bot. But I think we're very close to that. And so it's going to be really interesting to see when those two virtual agents start talking back to each other.
Had a similar experience actually. It was quite a while ago. There's a wine company that just spams people with phone calls and messages. And I think they'd started to train a bot. And I got a couple of minutes into the conversation and it became evident that it wasn't a person, but it was very realistic.
It was so realistic, this call, to the point that they had tuned in like background chatter, like a contact center background chatter. It wasn't until they asked me what time I wanted to book in the appointment. And I gave a time and it said a different time. I was like, no, mate, I meant this time. Did you mean this time? And it just started, it was like all of a sudden it got real robotic. But prior to that, it was seamless. But the tuning of the background noise of a contact in the background, I was like, that's next level clever.
Yeah, clever / deceptive.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Luke. That was a great chat about EX and AI and how you think about creativity. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been good to be on the show again.
You've been listening to The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
This podcast is produced by Callo, where art and science come together to turn interactions into experiences.
If you're interested in how Callo can help you, head to our website at calloconsulting.com.au.
The Calling was produced with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative.
So you don't miss an episode of The Calling, don't forget to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And please leave a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho. And we'll catch you next time on The Calling.